Welcome, everyone, to Rockin' Nation Podcast. I'm your host, Sam Snelling. This is another episode. I believe we're on Season 4, Episode 5 of Dive Cuts. Took a few weeks off, basically to align with my forthcoming vacation, going to the hills of Kentucky to celebrate an anniversary with my wife, leaving other people in charge of Rockin' Nation. So anything that happens at the website for like the next week and a half, like, don't bother me about it. It's not my fault. It's someone else's fault.
Just shunting responsibility.
Everybody, welcome Matthew J. Harris to the podcast, our every-time co-host. Matt, how are you?
I'm doing well. Sitting here enjoying some Old Forester Prohibition Series 1897 edition.
Excellent.
Not the 1910, not the 1920, which people may be more familiar with, but it's still a solid option. And it's been sitting here for a while, and I like it because it's a little bit more of like a a little more fruit notes than like floral notes in it, so it's really nice. So it's pretty good.
I'm a huge fan of the 1920. I've gone through the bottle that I picked up way faster than I usually go through a bottle, and I'm happy. I sort of won a raffle, and I ended up with a backup bottle. So I'm happy I have that backup bottle. It makes me feel less bad about going through the 1920 as fast as I have. I am sipping on an Elijah Craig barrel proof. It is the B520, Matt, and it is exceptional.
I'm happy you are doing that. We had two Old Forester bottles that we picked up, and these were kind of like the first Prohibition lines they did, the 1870 and the 1897, which, it's a pretty solid one. Like, it's in the same kind of price range as like a Four Roses or a Knob Creek, or even like what should be a Blanton's. Like, Blanton's, it should be like at 50 to 60, but it's obviously not. But it's a pretty solid option to play with. But like you said, the 1910 has kind of become the more vaunted member of that lineup. But Old Forester's doing really, really great stuff as a revival kind of brand. So, and they have a nice tasting room in downtown Louisville near some good restaurants. So if you're in the neck of the woods, you should hit it up. Assuming we ever open up again.
Yeah, I was going to say, they are currently closed due to COVID. So we are in, week what feels like 160 of quarantining. I've been working from home since mid-March. I'm still working from home, and we just got an email saying that we are going to continue working from home until probably at least January. So yay for that.
Yeah, I mean, we've known probably since midsummer that we weren't coming back until like February of 2021 at the earliest, at Indiana University School of Medicine. So we've been able to settle into the and accept that we are, at least I will be working out of my the bunker in my house and getting good and used to it. So, but
like literally sending tweets from the basement.
Yeah, I am.
Fortunately, not your mother's basement, though.
No, not my mother's basement. Really, though, this is the dog's basement. We call it the Bassett bunker. They have a run of the place, so they just let me hang out down here and work here. All they ask for is the occasional dental chew and belly rubs. So they're very easy to appease.
Yeah, my office is on the second floor. I have a nice little perch at the back of the house with a little view of the outside. So a little better setup than my setup at home. I don't necessarily miss. I do miss like seeing people. But
it's overrated. It's very overrated.
So we are looking forward to going to Kentucky and getting out of town, getting a change of scenery. But this has like been like the hardest vacation to plan that like I feel like, you know, me and my wife, our tastes are aligned in a lot of ways, so it's pretty easy to plan for us. Like, you usually just find like a bunch of good restaurants and you just sort of make your plan on when you're going to hit those restaurants, you know, find a few places to grab a good cocktail or a beer or, you know, stuff like that, and then, you know, a good neighborhood to kind of wander around, and we're usually pretty happy with that. And this one has been weird because it's just like, I mean, like, restaurants that even are open, like, you're not really comfortable going out to eat in because, like, we don't really know what the COVID situation is. And so we're going to go to Lexington for a few days, and then we're going south for the remainder of the trip to kind of hang out in the woods. But like, I don't know what their rate is there. I know what it's like in St. Louis. I know it's not great. So, yeah, it's been a weird vacation to plan. You know, but anniversary, got to do something, right?
Yeah. I mean, you could be like my mom and dad today who called me to, say that they're probably going to have to rejigger, our rehearsal dinner in 3 weeks. So you could be them, and they're like, hey, can you clue us in to, just, you know, is it safe to eat in public in Indianapolis? So you could be my parents trying to do that. It's, logistics are hard to do, no matter what you're attempting to pull off in this climate, but still, it'll be good to get out. Once you get into southern Kentucky, down to the Tennessee border near the Cumberlands, it's really pretty. Lots of good hikes, and you can find out of the way places to buy alcohol, so that's always handy.
Yeah, so I think there's going to be a little bit of bourbon hunting going on. I've got a couple bottles in mind that I'm going to try to locate. I plan on spending a lot of money, so at least there's that, you know.
you're gonna help the economy. You're gonna do some consumer spending.
Gonna try. Well, so we do have some basketball. I mean, like, it's funny that we kind of, you know, we took, I guess last week was supposed to be our scheduled week. You and I kind of chatted, thought it would made more sense to record this week, have next week off since I'll not be in town, and then followed up kind of back on a regular, you know, every couple weeks. But what's interesting is, like, nothing happened.
Yeah, the teams are just trying to, I think, figure out who they're going to play next month. That seems to be the biggest kink right now is, can you find an MTE? Did the MTE you signed up for a year ago still exist? Is the field still the same? Are you going to have to go somewhere else? Do you want to go anywhere and play on a neutral site out of state? Are you looking to host your own MTE? It just seems like it's a free-for-all right now. The only thing that we are sure of is that Missouri's going to be in the SEC Big 12 Challenge. And they're going to play a full SEC schedule. So that is 19 games. They can play a max of 27. So what the other 8 are, potentially the other 8 are, we don't know. Or they aren't locked in right now. We'll get to the piece in more depth a little later on. But the Athletic, CJ Moore, posted his kind of state of the program piece today over at the Athletic, which is always a good read and kind of a good primer on
friend
the
of the pod, CJ Moore,
friend of the pod indeed, who also published a not so good looking report on Greg Marshall out of Wichita State. There's some ugly stuff that apparently Greg had been doing at his program, or at least not treating people the way you would want to be treated. I'll just say it that way. But the one thing, you know, the one kernel in that report, you know, you go through and you kind of see what tidbits you pick up. Was if you read the schedule analysis section of the report, you can kind of piece together what Missouri's schedule would have looked like had we not been beset by COVID. Missouri, you know, before everything was shot to hell in March, really looked like it was going to have about 9 or 10 of its games kind of locked up for the schedule next season. You know, we knew they were going to have Kansas and Illinois on neutral floors. We knew that they were trying to go play Wichita State on the road. We've made our feelings on them scheduling Liberty for a home and home well known. Bradley was going to be a home game. That long-awaited Utah return game was supposed to be on the schedule. And then they were going to play in the Myrtle Beach MTE, and then they were going to have the Big 12 SEC Challenge. Well, CJ's report today made it sound like that they had three other confirmed games with Oral Roberts, Prairie View, and North Dakota, just kind of backfilling the home slate. So Missouri would have played, if the schedule had gone through, a minimum of three KenPom top 50 teams from last year, and I believe six teams that were in the KenPom top 150 last year. So a pretty, and that's before you got to the Big 12 opponent, who probably would have been a top 100 opponent, and maybe another one in the Myrtle Beach invite. So you were looking at eight top 150 opponents, and quite a few maybe in the top 100. So it was looking like a pretty robust non-conference slate for them, and for all this shook out. What Missouri's schedule looks like moving ahead, those are going to be worth keeping an eye on. It sounds like Konzo Martin wants to keep Missouri's two rivalry games with Kansas and Illinois on the schedule. So if you did that and had the Big 12 SEC Challenge, you're really looking to fill five dates, is kind of what it comes down to here. You need to find five more opponents to fill in the rest of the schedule. And like anyone else, Missouri is trying to do that in a way that's expeditious but also safe. So that to me is the biggest sort of pressing thing right now, is just simply, who are they going to play? Like, who's going to be on the schedule in, you know, when we tip off in late November?
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, obviously 2020 has just been a year to turn everything on its head, and you know, by this point we've kind of cleared like all of the preseason hurdles of, you know, talking about the non-conference schedule. I've got the entire conference schedule out to people who are, you know, going through their picks, and my previews are mostly written, as opposed to right now, which none of them are written. Although, like, you and I, like, offline, I've kind of been passing notes back and forth and all that kind of stuff on what we think all these teams are going to look like, and sort of piecing where we think they're going to fall. So I did kind of put a hit out on Twitter as we're looking for things to talk about, you know, what people, you know, want us to talk about. And like, one of the things was a good frequent listener, Mark Robinson, wanted to know, like, if we kind of saw this team finishing ninth in the conference, like, you know, the media is predicting, and I'm not really sure. I think, what was it, Rothstein?
Yeah, Rothstein.
Who had his rankings come out, and he had Mizzou ninth. Had Mizzou as, like, listed as, like, a potential sleeper team. Mm-hmm. I think that's a fair estimation for Missouri right now. Like, I understand why. I don't think it's going to shock anyone to that Mizzou might be undervalued, considering that we don't really know what to fully expect with a, you know, healthy brimming roster at this point, because, you know, Konzo Martin really hasn't had that luxury in 3 years. So, you know, what are we going to get this year? I mean, if they finish, you know, 10th and 6-12 with a bunch of injuries, like, I'm not going to be surprised by that. That's, if you don't have guys healthy, it's hard to win games.
Yeah.
You know, but I do think, I agree that if you're looking at sleeper teams, I think Missouri absolutely needs to be in the conversation for that, because of the fact that, you know, we don't really know what they're going to look like with a full season of a healthy Mark Smith and, you know, like improved play from Xavier, you know, Pinson and, you know, and whatever Jeremiah Tillman has become. So, you know, I tend to be a little bit of an optimist. I think you and I both are realists. I think I've probably said this before, but I think we're realists. I lean optimism, you maybe pessimism. but we're both rooted in a realistic viewpoint of what the program is. That's fair, right?
It is. And again, I'm hesitant to get too far out on a limb at this point until we really do have a conference schedule in front of us here. I do think matters.
Like placing teams in like you can figure out which rosters you like best.
And that's sort of what we've done. I think what you and I have done, we've exchanged like notes and ideas. I think we've kind of fleshed out tiers of teams based on the rosters that we like.
Yeah.
I don't know if I could go through today and pick a 1-14 order though, just because I need to see the schedule. As you've said before, in an unbalanced schedule situation, it really does matter what your composition of home and road and, you know, where you're drawing your opponents from. The only thing you can ever really say about Missouri is that they're going to play 6 games a year against Ole Miss, Arkansas, and Texas A&M. And this year, you know, Missouri might be in the same kind of tier as 2 of those teams, Ole Miss and Texas A&M. So, you know, I would be inclined to say that in a normal situation, that's 500 is what you hope for. If you were in those 4 games that you're going to play, you're going to try and hold serve at home, and you're probably going to likely take road losses. So, and then we'll see what Arkansas is. They've had a lot of turnover, but, you know, at best you could say, like, conservatively 3-3 with the known SEC slate right now. So there's not even really, like, a lot of hints you can find there in the games you know they're going to play. I tend to think that this team comes down to, you know, one, is Jeremiah Tillman going to put it all together that they need, you know, him at his best? He's, you know, out of all the front court options, he's their best one. When he's engaged and he's playing well, the team's, you know, overall defensive efforts better.
Tillman is one of the best bigs in the league.
Yeah, and that's a difference maker, you know, for this roster. You know, some people might say, you know, do you look at Torrance Watson next? I tend to think, you know, you can't correlate it really strongly. It's more anecdotal than anything else. But, you know, you're getting to where most guys, by the time they're a junior, have, like, you've seen the biggest gains you're going to see are probably going to come late in their sophomore year. And not to say they won't improve, but the rate of improvement marginally kind of flattens out a bit or levels off as they get older, which makes sense. For most guys, you know, any physical gains that are there, you know, the gains from coaching, you know, have sort of been maxed out at that point. So if, like, people are looking at Torrance Watson saying, you know, is he a guy who's going to be a 36-37% shooter, or should you put him at 32-33? It's probably the latter. And given what his shot composition is, in the role he's played, that seems like it's more of a specialist and a floor spacer than, you know, an attacking scoring wing option there. You know, if Mark Smith's healthy, I think you know what you're going to get from him. You're going to get a really good positional defender. You're going to get a guy who ideally knocks down jumpers and hopefully can play a little bit more off the bounce and attack closeouts and finish with a little bit more strength around the rim. But you kind of know what you're going to get with Mark. Pickett, same deal. You know, Javon Pickett is a guy who is kind of a jack of all trades and kind of, you know, does a really, really good job of picking his spots. Occasionally he'll have a big night, but you know what you're going to get out of him. And you know what you're going to get from Drew Smith. I really think the other guy that you have to look at is Xavier Pinson. People are going to put a lot of stock in that 9-game finishing stretch last season. I think there's reasons to maybe, you know, not be dubious, but I think that there's some context needed around that finishing stretch. But X produced. I think that's the bottom line there. The question is he going to be consistent for 30 games? And is he going to be a guy who, you know, instead of making, you know, the occasional, you know, jaw-dropping pass in transition, is he going to be a guy who can just make steady reads out of ball screens? Can he be a guy who initiates good offense? Can he do the things that he's going to need to do to be consistent to power the offense around him? And especially given how Missouri's shifting to a ball-heavy system that wants to create shots off kickouts on drives, not playing off the post, not playing off ball reversals. They want to get downhill, force teams to compact, and then kick out. Is, you know, Pinson going to be able to one, be efficient in those situations and make good decisions? I think those are the, that's the other thing you're going to need right now. So is Tillman going to be a guy who is a borderline all, you know, all conference level type big? And are you going to see Xavier Pinson, you know, show some consistency that we've been waiting for? If those two things happen, then I think you've got a roster that can contend for an NCAA tournament bid. If that, if those two things don't happen, irrespective of injuries, then I think you've got a team that's going to be pesky. They're going to finish around ninth. They're going to be in that mix for ninth or tenth. But
probably win a couple games they shouldn't.
Yeah, they're going to pick off somebody they shouldn't.
Lose a couple they shouldn't.
They shouldn't. And you're going to turn the roster over and start again. So that's not to say that, you know, you don't want to see Watson play better. You don't want to see
Although, Kobe I don't know, Brown with eligibility on question, we could just run it all back next year with the same
crew.
With
five guys coming in?
And with the five coming in. I mean...
Five of y'all aren't staying.
You saw that, right? You saw that, like, they're open to the possibility of, like, eligibility not counting. And I just, like, I don't understand how you don't count eligibility. You're playing games. I understand. Yeah. Like, you have your in football, you have the same, you know, four-game rule for guys to be able to redshirt. And I think that's a good rule because, you know, if guys miss games because of COVID, but you know, you need a freshman to kind of step in, like, you can still hold him back in other games and maintain that eligibility. But it doesn't make sense to me that we're just going to be like, no, this entire season is a mulligan.
I don't think
the SEC is playing 10 games, or at least they're going to try.
Yeah,
and like basketball, like they're going to play 25 to 27 games, and it's just, and that's before the NCAA tournament. That's a full season.
Yeah, they're going to. Just count it. Just count the season and just turn over. But to get back to the point there, I think really at the end of the day, it's can Pinson and Tillman, you know, be reliable, everyday contributors? That to me is what this roster needs. You know, it's interesting to ask questions about Torrance Watson shooting. Will Kobe Brown be a little bit more assertive as a driver? Is Mark Smith going to be healthy? All those things matter. That, you know, I don't want to cast those out and say they're irrelevant, but Pinson and Tillman to me are, and what they do this season, you know, are dictate where Missouri winds up in the pecking order, or are going to play a large role in dictating where they wind up in the pecking order.
Yeah, Matt's trying to kind of give away my Missouri preview.
I mean, is it giving away the preview? I mean, what? I mean,
I'm joking, but. I think what you do is you look at, so, you know, like we were kind of talking beforehand, and each of the team previews I go through and I kind of pick two guys who I think are going to be standouts. And for the most part, all of those standouts are guys who I think are probably going to be the two best players in the team. But I went a different route this year when I was kind of picking those players, and I went with Pinson and Tillman. And you all can read about this probably a week before the season starts. But the main reason is, like, we know what we're going to get from Drew Smith. Drew Smith is a great player. Like, he is just a terrific college basketball player.
Borderline preseason all-conference guy for me.
But what Drew Smith is going to give you is consistency. And what we haven't gotten... And what Missouri needs is consistency from two guys, and that's Pinson and that's Tillman. Now, if Torrance Watson wants to step up and be an added threat on the wing, if Mark Smith wants to be a 15-point night kind of guy, great. But I still think the crux of the season is going to come down to Tillman and Pinson. If those guys are consistent and play well. Missouri is a NCAA tournament team. If they're what they've been the last couple of years, which is inconsistent, occasionally brilliant, but mostly frustrating, then, you know, Missouri is going to be a bottom half of the conference team.
And the one thing that I do want to touch on from CJ's piece is, you know, in that piece, Konzo Martin said he could see this team going up to 10 deep where no guys play more than 30 minutes a night, which would be great because you don't want to break Drew Smith. You would really like Drew Smith to not be playing 33 minutes a night, wearing down and, you know, kind of fading down the stretch. The other facet that he mentioned was they think they can play a little bit faster this year. And in that piece, there's two things that, you know, can help them do that. One, don't foul, because that's dead balls, and you can't. It's harder to create tempo off a dead ball than it is off a rebound or off an inbound. And also cut turnovers down. Like, just quit turning the ball over. Just value possessions. And I say that because if Tillman commits silly fouls, it makes that hard. If X isn't valuing the ball, those are possessions that get wasted. Ideally, what you would have is you could have Tillman, you know, being able to go to the glass, quick outlet, fire it, and then have your guards get out and transition. You could look and have Tillman sprinting rim to rim or coming down to set a drag screen and some sort of action that way. But you could be assertive off misses. And I wrote this back in the spring. That's really where I think Missouri can find a way to pick the tempo up and to play the way that Martin wants to, and to sort of, you know, shift the style of this offense, as if they can just have guys on the floor. If they can, you know, execute consistently, you know, they can begin to transition into a team that plays a little faster, that spreads the floor out a bit more. It's a bit more of attacking in terms of what it wants to do off the bounce and in ball screens, than trying to come down, you know, set up, run guys off some screening action, and then score off reversals. You know, having X and Tillman on the floor is vital to make that version happen. If that's what Konzo Martin wants this roster to be, he's going to need those guys to be on the floor.
Mm-hmm.
So I think you can really see kind of the through line for what this team needs. It needs a consistent Tillman, and it needs a consistent Benson.
Yeah, I think, like, the key for me is, you know, everybody talks about the improvement down the stretch, and I think one of the things that that the change in the offensive approach really did was it put good free throw shooters at the free throw line to make easy points, and when Pinson and Drew Smith in particular, and really Missouri is a team that is full of really good free throw shooters. You look at, you know, Mark Smith and Torrance Watson and you know, even Tillman for a big, you know, shoots free throws pretty well. You know, that's going to take your, I think CJ mentioned, like, they were at like 0.86 points per possession and got it up to like 1.2 or 1.3 down that stretch. And like, that's a huge gain. And a lot of that, I think, came from them just being more aggressive and getting to the free throw line in a way that, you know, produced obviously a lot of points. And when you're sending good free throw shooters to the line, you're gonna score a lot of points. Like, it's not rocket science. It's not complicated. You need to find ways to manufacture points, and for a team that struggled to make outside shots, that was a really good way to do that. Now, if this is a team that, you know, like, another one of the questions that we had, that was kind of, you know, slight pivot, but still kind of on the same line of conversation, at, you know, Kevin Free tweets, wanted to know about, like, player development, and if there are guys that might make it a little bit of a different leap since Michael Porter Sr. Is no longer in the program as the director of player development. And I just want to say, like,
that's
just a title. The entire coaching staff is responsible for developing the players, and that starts at Konzo Martin, the assistant coaches, you know, the everyone works at developing, but the biggest part of that is the player himself. Like, the player has to be in the gym working to get better. So if Torrance wants to suddenly decide that he wants to go back to his freshman year and shoot 36-37% from 3-point range, well, that's a great thing. But you don't want to count on that. And I think, like, you know, getting back to like the manufacturing points, like when the outside shooting is failing you, you have to find ways to get points. And the change in offense was that I thought was helpful to them the most was that it put two really good free throw shooters in positions to attack in a league where guys are really athletic and they're going to go for block shots and they foul a lot and they, you know, refs call a lot of fouls and they're giving the benefit to the offensive player. And so it's a smart, you know, calculated move that I think that Missouri will, if they're not kind of taking that approach to start the season, like I'll kind of question what the hell is going on. But I think that that's what they need to be doing is, like you said, focus on playing with a bit more pace, but attacking early on, getting to the free throw line, manufacturing points. And then if you are shooting the ball better, great. You know, then when you are driving towards the basket, you're not just trying to get to the free throw line. You can, you know, kick the ball out and get somebody an open shot.
My hope is to sort of piggyback off that, you know, we talked about Tillman's inconsistency. Now I've written this, you know, the last two off seasons. At his best, Tillman's a really good ball mover out of the post. I think he makes good decisions. And I thought he got better in the face of double teams. But when they tried to route the offense through him and, you know, play through the post, teams just sent hard doubles. Missouri didn't make enough jumpers last year to really take the pressure off him. And I think it doesn't mean you abandon post-ups entirely. I think you can still try and find a way to, you know, to facilitate getting him some post touches there. But the one thing I like about the shift in the offense here is I've always thought Tillman has really, really good coordination. He's got good spatial awareness. His feet are fantastic. His hands are great. You know, he seems like a really, really good option to use in spread pick and rolls, that you could bring him out, have him as a roller, and just, you know, give yourself a guy who you can hit on the move, who's going to be able to snag passes and finish. And I think for him, that's just, rather than have him hand fighting on the block, rather than have him trying to, you know, establish position, just, you know, putting him in some space and asking him to, you know, get to play downhill with some of these guys is another good option. I just think it's a nice way for you to diversify how he's getting his touches, and maybe it reduces some risk. Now, some people might say, oh, he's probably just going to pick up a million illegal screens. Maybe, but a lot of times an illegal screen is not the fault of the big, it's the fault of the guard who doesn't take their man into the big. So some people might say, you know, having Tillman function more as a screener might put him at risk. I tend to think, though, that when illegal screens happen, it's more the fault of the dribbler who doesn't know how to take his man into the screen. But I just like the idea of putting him in space and diversifying how he gets his touches. And, you know, seeing if that can, you know, give him some confidence and give him some easier plays than trying to fight through, you know, two guys that have come over to, you know, make his life heck or to make his life hell. So I think that that's another thing that this offense can do. Is it can just give Tillman a little bit of a different role, and it can, you know, diversify where he gets some offense from. So I think that's the other underplayed value of what they can do with this schematic shift.
Yeah, overall, like, I think, like, player development is just one of those things that, I don't know, like, we've talked about it being nonlinear. We've talked about it not really being something that I think, like, I think that a lot of coaches kind of take hits on, you know, developing guys. And the reality is, you know, as a former coach, like, I know the guys that are really, really, really want to be there and want to show up and want to be great players. And those guys are the guys that are there early, they're getting up shots. And you know, a coach sets up a structured, you know, improvement time where the player shows up and gets the work, you know, that is allowed by the NCAA as far as their time allotted, you know, and coaches sort of script that stuff and what they're going to work on and the things that they're going to try to develop, you know, but it really comes down to, you know, the player who's going to grab a manager, you know, after the session's over and be like, hey, I want to keep doing this and working beyond that. And I think, you know, like when you look at, like, we know for a fact that, like, Javon Pickett is a guy that is just a gym rat and loves being in the gym. Javon Pickett's also a guy that we've also talked about having just a limited body. Like, there's just only so much that he can get out of what he is. You know, maybe he takes some sort of like Jordan Geist-like leap. You know, I think a lot of people were sort of amazed at what Jordan Geist kind of became as a senior. You know, but I just don't think that there's a whole lot of guys in this roster that you're looking at and just sort of seeing as like future pros. So it's really going to come down to, like we've said, it's going to come down to Drew Smith being as consistent as he was last year, Mark Smith being healthy and being as consistent as he was when healthy. You know, and then whatever you get from Xavier Pinson and Jeremiah Tillman, and I think that sort of foursome gives you everything that you need. I like what they can get from Drew Buggs. I like what they can get if Watson decides he's going to shoot the ball better. You know, Kobe Brown, we've talked about him as far as being kind of a wild card and a guy that, you know, could potentially take another step and being more of an impact guy. But it's going to come down to those like four guys. If those four guys are consistent and good, this is a team that, and I kind of go back to like what we were looking at Missouri last year. Like, I was confident that Missouri had a team that was at least a top half team, and they were everything that I thought they were going to be. They just shot the ball poorly. I didn't think they were going to shoot the ball. I didn't think they were going to be like 40% three-point shooters. I didn't necessarily think they'd be 28% three-point shooters, and that's what happened. So I look at what I thought last year. If Missouri has the kind of performance that I expect, I think this is a team that can be like top six. When I say top six, I don't think they're going to be like 1, 2, or 3. But with the right conference pull, I could see them maybe getting as high as 4, but I think more likely, like to me, like 6 is kind of like what I think they're ceiling, because, you know, the league did improve its recruiting. But that's up to, like we said, that's really up to getting consistency from Pinson, getting consistency and the kind of play that you want from Tillman. And then the other guy's kind of filling around. That's a lot to ask.
It is. I think their ceiling's probably 6th, just like you. That's a team that's probably a 9 or 10 seed in March. But given quibbling about seedings and where they go is irrelevant at this point. The program just needs to, and we've said it before, just needs to get into a consistent run where it's making trips into March and reestablishing itself as a program that can get there, is going to be competitive year in, year out, is going to be that has a defined style, that has a culture that, you know, is going to produce consistent, you know, results. I think, you know, injuries, you know, have played a big role in the last 2 years. You know, it's incumbent on Mizzou to stay healthy this year. If they do, I think they give themselves a chance. But it's going to be really fascinating to see where they sort of land in that mix with Texas A&M, Ole Miss, and Auburn, those are kind of the teams I think they wind up with in that group. You know, teams that I think you could make a case for them being on the bubble or, you know, sliding back and, you know, just being NIT teams and, you know, occasionally surprising someone each night. Missouri will be the most experienced team in the league. They're going to return the most statistical production. But the league is going to be a little bit deeper than it was a year ago. And we're going to be a broken record here. Production's only so good so long as it's consistent. And, you know, all the stats that Missouri's going to throw out about the minutes it brings back, all the points it brings back, you know, those stats were amassed on a roster that was inconsistent. You know, can they put together consistent performances? Can they get to 10-8 in this conference? Can they put together, you know, some quad one and quad two wins and get themselves into the discussion for the NCAA tournament? That's really what it comes down to for this group. If that doesn't happen, I don't know that there's going to be a seat warming, but I definitely think you're going to be hitting the reset button next season, and it's going to be a younger roster, and you're going to be going into, you know, year five, year six, still trying to establish a consistent identity for this program, and it's got to happen at some point. So this year it sort of feels like a make or break point, or getting awfully close to that, for them to kind of establish the, you know, the barometer that Konzo Martin thinks he needs to be successful here.
And as you like to say, spend more money.
Spend more money. more money.
So as always, what are the more?
I just want to throw this out here. The last bit. I say that people think I'm joking. Missouri has not ranked better than 9th in spending since on basketball since they joined the SEC. And they haven't been, I think, better than... The one year where they were higher than that was the year they fired Kim Anderson. And that was because of the buyouts they had to pay.
Had to pay some buyouts. So, had to, you know, sign a new coach.
Yeah, it's... I really... People will complain about the recruiting and about the performance series here, but go look at what teams spend on basketball in this conference. Missouri is... I have it in front of me. In 2012 and 13, Missouri ranked 9th in spending. 2013-14, 9th in spending. 2014-15, 13th, ahead of only Mississippi State. 2015-16, dead last. 2016-17, they were second, but they fired Kim that year. Konzo Martin's first year, they were then 11th last year. Or in 2018 and 19, they were 12th, and we don't have the budget numbers in for 2019-20, but again, Missouri is not spending like a top half of the SEC team.
We don't have the numbers for a year when Michael Porter Sr.'s contract comes off the books and they inserted Konzo's longtime friend into that assistant coach spot, who is not making as much as Michael Porter Sr.
Yeah, Missouri has basically only outspent Georgia and Mississippi State in basketball in the conference. So when I say spend more money, I say that half in jest, but if you think Missouri's committed in terms of resources allocated, like just in raw dollars, that's not the case. It's that they're getting outspent, and they've spent more money in recent years, but they're still... The rate of spending is still getting trumped by their SEC peers. It's still there. So, if you want to talk about why isn't Missouri recruiting better, why isn't Missouri performing better, sometimes part of it is just what are we willing to invest in the program. So that's the end of my spiel there. But there's actual evidence behind the call to spend more money.
And you've been diving into that quite a bit. That I think we'll probably maybe after the season, I think it'd probably be a good idea to sort of take stock and dive deeper into that, possibly in the preseason if you want to put it all together. But I just think it's really interesting. We were talking about the other day, like Alabama, you know, makes some list for another 5-star recruit after they had, did they land a 5-star recruit the other day?
They landed JD Davidson.
That's it. That's what I was thinking of. And everyone's just like, oh man, like Alabama has always recruited well. Like Alabama spends on basketball. They spend on football. Alabama spends more money on football than Missouri spends on athletics. So, that's not a lie. Like Alabama spends $120-some-odd million a year on football. Missouri's athletics budget, last I checked, was in the 90s.
This is what you need to know about Alabama between 2012 and 2019. So, aside, last year's numbers aren't in yet. But they ranked 21st in average spending in among high majors at $9.3 million a year on basketball. They spend more than Illinois. They spend more than Virginia. They spend more than North Carolina. They spend more than Wisconsin. They spend more than Florida. Spend more than Michigan. Missouri, if you were to look at its spending for that same period, where does Missouri rank? They're 50th in average spending among high majors.
That's about where they were in like the KenPom rankings, weren't they?
Yeah, it's somewhere close to there.
Like I think they were like 45th or something.
Yep, is where they have been like in the KenPom rankings since KenPom's been doing it. So, and if you look at correlations between recruiting, the average recruit rating and spending, Missouri is recruiting the type of player you'd expect for the money they spend. So if you think Missouri is whiffing when they're taking a guy whose average rating is 90 in the 247 composite, nope, that's about where they should be based on spending. So it's it really is like at the end of the day, I mean, it's not completely one-to-one, but there's some, just when you throw the two numbers together, the correlation and the variance rates are pretty good in a vacuum. So again, if you're talking about Missouri being why Missouri should be a top half of the SEC program, I agree with you, but its spending is around 10th, its recruiting is around that, and its attendance is around that. When you are 10th in, you know, those key areas, you're probably going to show up around 10th in the standings, unless you hit it out of the park with a hire. And maybe that's Konzo Martin, but he's also had a bunch of injuries that have hampered him. So that's my spiel. We'll do more dives on that, but it's not hard to look at that number and draw a lot of conclusions based on what spending tells you.
Right. I think like the financial side of things is such like an interesting topic. And I know that we could probably continue to go deeper on this. We are kind of running up against our specific time. I do want to acknowledge. So we did have one other question that was from at KW Zulu, who wanted to know about the non-conference schedule. We did kind of talk about that. And I, you know, we're still figuring out what the schedule is going to be. I think what we've kind of talked about, like, we kind of know that they'll have certain games in the schedule. They're going to do everything they can to make sure those games are on the schedule. Those are going to be the rivalry games. It's just a matter of, like, what else is going to fill out. But my favorite question came because Chester A. Barfer just knows me too well, Matt, at this point. And he asked, if each player on the team was a cocktail, what would they be? Since we are already at 48 minutes, I think, something like that, what I want to do is I want to explore this topic more in depth on the next pod. But I want, so you and I did a quick brainstorm before we started recording and had a few, like, we didn't complete the team, but I think we got about half. We felt pretty good with. So we'll leave a teaser. How's this? We'll do a teaser, and I'm just going to put it on into your lap, Matt, because I'm going to say of the ones that we brainstormed, what was your like favorite correlation between cocktail and player? Yeah, that's right. That was a fantastic connection. So does anybody know what a rusty nail is? Or do you know what it is?
I vaguely have a notion of it. I'm double checking to make sure that my memory of a rusty nail is actually accurate here.
It's a very sort of like
old school
cocktail. Like it's like one of those like tried and true 50s.
Yeah. Oh God, I remember this. Yeah, my grandpa enjoyed these. Drambuie and scotch. Oh God, I had a sip of one of these when I was like 9, and it made me not want to drink again until I was like 16. It was just disgusting. Like, it's... Oh, God. It was not good.
So, not only does, like, the... Like, the name of the cocktail, it's Rusty Nail. Not only does that fit, like, Mitchell Smith's game. Like, because he's just like that, you know, kink in the armor for, like, nobody wants to play against the guy. He plays hard, he rebounds hard, he takes charges. I think about, like, the Illinois game when he took the charge against what's the guy's name?
Is it Cockburn?
No, it was against the white forward that is was he Georgie?
Georgie Bezanishvili.
Yeah, so he takes the charge and just like he's pumping, and you could just see like Illinois just like getting irritated by Mitchell Smith. So Rusty Nail is like the perfect moniker for him. But not only that, like it's this old school, just like kind of grit your teeth and get through approach to playing basketball. And I think he's a really good fit for like Konza Martin, what Konza Martin wants to do. He's a guy who's kind of accepted his role. Like he's not expecting to be a 35-minute kind of guy. He's happy to just do whatever the team needs. And that is the quintessential Rusty Nail. It's a necessary cocktail to have in your arsenal. It's not always something that is enjoyable, but damn it, it gets the job done.
If you just want to get good and liquored up, I mean, 2 ounces, like the directions here are simple. Mix 2 ounces blended scotch, 1/2 ounce Drambuie, 1 dash of bitters.
Yeah. So Drambuie is basically just like, it's like a scotch liqueur.
Yeah. It's
like sweetened scotch. It's like, it's kind of like scotch and honey is basically kind of like the flavor of it.
Just bad memories of Drambuie. But yeah, so that's my favorite, is Mitchell Smith is the Rusty Nail. That's what I'd go with.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty good. Yeah, so we've got, I think, probably 3 or 4 others that I feel really good about.
We gotta workshop the rest.
But yeah, we need to workshop. So we'll have the full reveal for the next podcast. I'll have some time as I stare off into the woods of the Daniel Boone National Forest to think about Mizzou players and their, you know, their what cocktail they are. And we'll get there. But it'll be in 2 weeks. So for everybody that is subscribed to the channel, thank you for subscribing. You can follow Matt on Twitter. You can follow me on Twitter. Any hate mail goes to Mitch. He's the one that puts us up to all this. So I do think that you've had now like 4 or 5 podcasts of Before the Box Score in a row. Those guys will be back this weekend and next week with more podcasts. Talking all things LSU, where Missouri is apparently going to take on the reigning national champs shorthanded. Can't wait to watch that game. It is all kinds of exciting. It's a good time to be watching college football when we're canceling games. We're missing significant players from rosters because they possibly came in contact with somebody who tested positive for coronavirus. It's a good time to be a college sports fan.
Thank God I got the Premier League and Bundesliga back. Thank God. Thank God I got European soccer back.
All right. So, Matt's happy that soccer is there. The NBA is almost wrapped up, unfortunately. But college basketball is right around the corner, Matt. And we'll be talking about a lot of it. So thanks for tuning in. Hit that subscribe. Hit that like. Whatever you have to do. Share it to your friends. We'll talk to you again in 2 weeks with all kinds